Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Conditional Sale and Patent Rights Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 21, 2017, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Impression Products, Inc. v. Lexmark International, Inc. Lexmark International, Inc., which owns many patents for its printer toner cartridges, allows customers to buy its cartridges through a return program, which is administered under a combination single-use patent and contract license. Customers purchasing cartridges through the return program are given a discount in exchange for agreeing to use each cartridge once before returning it to Lexmark. All of the domestically sold cartridges at issue here, and some of those sold abroad, were subject to the return program. Impression Products, Inc. acquired some Lexmark cartridges abroad after a third party physically changed the cartridges to enable their reuse in order to resell them in the United States. Lexmark then sued, alleging that Impression had infringed on Lexmark's patents because Impression acted without authorization from Lexmark to resell and reuse the cartridges. Impression contended that its resale of the cartridges was not an infringement because Lexmark, in transferring the title by selling the cartridges initially, granted the requisite authority. The district court granted Impression's motion to dismiss as it related to the domestically sold cartridges, but denied it as to the foreign sold cartridges. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit reversed the district court's judgment as to the domestically sold cartridges, but affirmed dismissal regarding the cartridges sold abroad. There are two questions now before the Supreme Court. One, whether a conditional sale that transfers title to the patented item while specifying post-sale restrictions on the article's use or resale avoids application of the patent exhaustion doctrine and therefore permits the enforcement of such post-sale restrictions through the patent law's infringement remedy. And two, whether in light of the court's holding in Kurtzsang v. John Wiley & Sons, Inc., that the common law doctrine barring restraints on alienation that is the basis of exhaustion doctrine makes no geographical distinctions, a sale of a patented article authorized by the U.S. patentee that takes place outside the United States exhausts the U.S. patent rights in that article. To discuss the case, we have David S. Olson, who is Associate Professor of Law at Boston College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Olson.
It was an interesting argument, I'd say not entirely surprising, but let me give a brief background on the case, and then I'll come back to the argument and a few things that I noted from the argument. So the case, Impression Products versus Lexmark, you know, at issue is Lexmark sells printer cartridges for its printers, and those cartridges, some of them are sold with no restrictions whatsoever. Others are sold as part of a special program where they give a lower price, and they have restrictions saying you can't reuse or resell the cartridges. What First Impression does is buy these cartridges, including the ones that have the limitation, the contract limitation on their sale. Lexmark buys these from consumers who've bought the cartridges or from other resellers, and then it does refill and reuse the cartridges and sell them back to consumers. So it competes with Lexmark. First Impression competes with Lexmark, and Lexmark wanted to keep resellers out of these cartridges. What they're effectively doing is price discrimination. They're selling to some consumers who are either going to use less cartridges or have a lower price point that they're willing to pay. They're selling them the cartridge for a cheaper price, but then demanding that this kind of cartridge not be reused in a way that would undercut their sales at a higher price point to others. So that's what their practice is. The issue is whether they're allowed to do that. So is Lexmark allowed through contract law to say the limitation on your use is use only for personal use, not reuse or resale of this cartridge? If someone does reuse or resell, that's clearly a contract law violation. Everybody's in agreement on that. But what Lexmark wants to do is say that's also a patent law violation in that the license to use, so the patent law, Section 271 of the patent statute says that the patentee has the right to, the exclusive right to make, use, sell, or import as well. And so the argument is that this exclusive right to use is being violated if you make a use that's outside of that original license, that contract which gave a license only for the use and not for reuse or resale. So what Lexmark wants to do is have patent damages apply against both the, it could be against the individual who resold it, but of course what Lexmark is really interested in is having patent damages available, including treble damages for willful infringement against First Impression and other resellers. And that would be effective because contract law can't touch First Impression because there's no privity of contract as long as First Impression doesn't buy directly from Lexmark, whereas patent damages could be a very effective tool in keeping Lexmark off the market. So that's the kind of economics and the legal argument. This runs up against First Impression's argument of patent exhaustion, and this goes back, and the court spent some interesting time trying to trace back, what, you know, where does this come from? Is it still in the law? Why is it not codified? But the first sale doctrine, or sorry, rather the first sale is what we usually call in copyright law, patent exhaustion in patent law. Patent exhaustion has been around and mentioned in one way or another for some 150 years. Before the 1952 Act, you can go back to the predecessor to the Patent Act, Section 151 of that law. And there the court had some language saying, you know, okay, that right to sell is more like a right, it's the right to vend, so it's initial sale, but not a right to control resell sale. But the problem with these early cases, as the as some of the justices were pointing out, and then as the counsel for Lexmark pointed out, the problem with these early cases is when they're saying it's a right to vend, not to control resale, is you didn't usually in these early cases, although we did have, in one case it's different, but in some of these early cases you didn't have that particular specific contract term that limited the license and was controlling the resale. So how to interpret some of that early language is somewhat difficult. So the court was really pressing counsel for First Impression to say, why isn't this codified? Justice Alito and Justice Kennedy both pressed counsel on that, saying, if this is a well-established patent law, why has it not been codified? The answer was, well, you know, some areas aren't codified. The Deputy Solicitor General also agreed with First Impressions, the defendant in the case, on this point, and said, you know, this is the sort of thing that's kind of always been assumed to be there. And so when the 52 Act came about and they recodified the infringement part of the statute, there was no need to specify because this was always what was understood as kind of part of that right to sell, is that it's only a right to a first sale, and after that, the patent is exhausted. So we've got, one area that's interesting of the argument is we're going to have some pressure on where do we ground this patent exhaustion right if the court comes up with a patent exhaustion holding, because it's the provenance and exact place to attach it is somewhat unclear. The other issue in the case is whether there's extraterritorial. Let me back up and put it in a more neutral way. The other issue in the case is whether if there's a first sale in a foreign country, and then that person who buys it imports into the U.S. and sells in the U.S., can the patent owner block that importation? The patent statute explicitly gives the patent owner the right to control importation in the U.S. Patent law is explicitly territorial in that it only applies in the U.S. And so the issue there is whether there's patent exhaustion for an international sale and then the good is imported into the U.S. First Impression says yes. Lexmark says no, that patent law is territorial and therefore you shouldn't extraterritorially apply patent law. Justice Alito picked up on that point, and he was pressing First Impression's counsel pretty hard on the international exhaustion issue and said, you know, in recent years, the statute, we've said repeatedly, we being the court, that the statute doesn't apply outside the U.S., unless there's a clear statement. There's no clear statement here. Why should patent law have extraterritorial effect? I thought the counsel was pretty good with the comeback saying, well, it's not really extraterritorial because we're only talking about application of U.S. patent law to sales made in the U.S. And what we're saying is that if there's a first authorized sale, wherever it is, then the effect in the U.S. is that there's no more patent rights. And so then he analogized it to the Kurtzain case, the copyright case that said that if a copyrighted book is sold anywhere in the world and it's an authorized sale by the copyright holder, then there's no then first sale applies. But copyright law is, of course, different because there's a specific statutory provision for first sale in copyright law, and there's nothing like that in patent law. Justice Breyer chimed in along with the First Impression Council and agreed that it's just an application of U.S. law. Also, Breyer signaled pretty strongly, saying, Justice Breyer, that the other side, Lexmark, has the harder job here. So that would, for tea leaf reading, that would lead one to presume Justice Breyer is more persuaded of the patent exhaustion occurring here. But when it comes to this international exhaustion issue, it's a harder issue. The government goes with Lexmark on this. The Deputy Solicitor General argued that a first sale that is authorized in Germany, but without a, you know, with a limitation that says no importation into the U.S., that should apply and be upheld because of that right to control importation, and that therefore the government thought that domestically patent exhaustion should apply, but not internationally. The justices pressed the Solicitor General, Deputy Solicitor General Stewart, on that, saying, where does this come from? Is this just a policy choice? Can you base that in the statute? The Deputy Solicitor General had some trouble basing it in the statute. And so that's an interesting kind of thing to look for. There's also a question of who receives the value of, or whether the patent owner can really receive the full value of a patent if the rights are exhausted by an initial sale in, say, Germany or China or wherever it is. And, you know, the idea here is you sell your good originally, say it's into the global supply chain manager, so it's a chip for a computer. You should just charge whatever the market will bear, and you've gotten the value of your patent. That was the argument of First Impressions, and Justice Sotomayor, in her questioning, seemed to strongly agree with that. On the other hand, Lexmark's counsel pushed back, saying, you know, the value of your, you have a different patent in Germany and a different patent in China, or maybe no patent there, and so a first authorized sale in those countries may reflect a different value of the IP in those countries than it has in the U.S. And there are also some issues about price discrimination. So using the restriction on importation is a way to price discriminate, to charge different prices in different countries. There's argument back and forth as to the benefit of that. There's a amicus brief by some law professors and various economists saying that this is a pro-competitive and more efficient kind of way to go. And for full disclosure purposes, I should say that I signed on to that brief. So that was my opinion. The justices, it was hard to say what their take on that was. Some justices didn't seem impressed by the price discrimination guarantee or argument, and said there's no guarantee of that in the statute, that perhaps just getting the average value of the patent when it's sold is enough. Others didn't seem to engage with it as much. There are also questions about kind of the overlap between patent exhaustion and antitrust law. Justice Breyer was interested in that. And whether you need patent exhaustion to affect or whether antitrust law on its own could kind of do the job and protect against anti-competitive uses of kind of controlling downstream resale. So that's the kind of the main things that I took away. The counsel for Lexmark was allowed to talk, I'd say, longer and without interruption. It's hard to say whether that means that counsel, whether the justices were agreeing with what counsel was saying or whether they disagree but didn't think it was worth arguing about. One can never know what to say from that. They were more active at first questioning the counsel for First Impression. My sense was that some of that was because counsel for First Impression, in my opinion, has a bit harder argument as to finding that statutory basis for the patent exhaustion doctrine, whereas counsel for Lexmark is simply saying there is none and it shouldn't exist.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.